welcome once again to the Disciplined Investor Podcast. This is your host, Andrew Horowitz, and this is podcast number 27, episode 27. It has been quite a week. We've had some amazing things happen. The markets were on just an incredible tear. That's why I picked out that song today. I thought it would be really apropos. Zoom, when I was a child growing up in New York, I remember that show. I used to sing that song, as a matter of fact, and brought back some great memories when I thought about it because the markets are just zooming. And also at the same time, I started thinking about Zoomies, the stock that I had recommended to you about a month or so ago, a month and a half ago, when we had started looking at it. It was about 36. It's about close to 48 right now, 47 and a half, 48 right now. And that's been a great little play. I think it has some further room to zoom on. I think that it's a great brand and a great company. Management has done a wonderful job of expanding the overall brands that are there and really giving shoppers a great experience. We have another great guest with us today, Herb Greenberg, and I'll tell you a little bit about him in a minute, but Herb is going to give us some great insight on the markets, hopefully, and, you know, tell us, I'm going to ask him about, you know, what is it that he does and how does he research things? So I'm always curious what they do in terms of the guys that are writing and the guys that are really in the trenches telling us what's going on with the stocks out there. I'll also mention that, this is a more of a personal matter and a personal issue I want to tell you, but you people have been amazing. I went to iTunes the other day and I took a look and I was just really, I was speechless. We have like 75 great reviews. And I know that I've been asking for them and I'm saying, hey, do me a favor. If I've given you some advice, if I've made you some money, go over and give me a review on iTunes because that's the way that we really move up the ranks, and that's one of the ways that we can really tell how we're going, how we're doing. Sure, I get emails from you and questions, but it's those reviews that are really very helpful. And I'm going to ask you again. I'm going to ask you one more time. I mean, I want to get over 100. Right now we have 75. I want to get over 100. So if you're getting anything out of the show, if you got a great stock tip, if you're learning a little bit about money, if you're entertained, I don't know, maybe I said something that entertained you, go over to iTunes and give me a review because I think that's going to be, you know, really, really helpful to me, and I do appreciate it. We also set up that new phone number, and if you remember, I mentioned to you in last podcast that you can call that number at any time and ask me a question that you have on your mind, and the number is 877-623-8473. We'll have that, of course, in the show notes, but write that down. If you have a question, we're going to get to that at the end of the show right after the Herb Greenberg interview. I'm going to answer some questions that you had and some ask me. I have a couple of emails that you sent. Thank you for those, and I'll do my best to answer those, and I'm going to also play a quick question I thought was really an excellent question because I think that a lot of people may have the same thing out there. You have a lot of so talking about appreciated stock, but I'll get to that in a minute. And finally, before we begin and get into this, I want to also mention to you that finally it's here. We're shipping it. The book, The Disciplined Investor, Essential Strategies for Success, is available. And we have a brand new store that we built on the site. It's ready to go. And you can get it at Amazon. You get Barnes & Noble. It's going to be in all the stores shortly. They kind of take one more step to get into the stores. Online is first in the stores. And I'm going to ask one more favor. If you are getting anything out of the show, you know, it's free, obviously. You know, you can get your podcast for free. If you're getting anything out of the show, if I've given you an idea, something to think about, entertained you, you're subscribing, you know what? How about buying a book? All I'm asking is for one book, $14.95. $14.95. And by the way, all of you that have bought books so far, they're being shipped out right now. And of course, the pre-orders are all getting signed and a couple of other goodies from me. But if you're listening to this and you're getting some great ideas, you know, we have chapters on technical analysis in there. I wrote about fundamental analysis, quantitative analysis, the tools, the things you have to do is every single day. What is it that you should be reading? I mean, should you be reading Money Magazine or Fortune or Forbes or should you be reading Barron's? I mean, what is it that you should be looking at? It's all in the book. It's $14.95 plus shipping. That's what this is all about. This is getting the investment information you need. Obviously, I'm giving you a commercial here, but it's all about making you the greatest investor, the most disciplined investor that you can be. That's why I wrote the book. That's why I want you to buy it. It's important to you and it's important to me. And for the small investment, I'm telling you, it's going to be great.
Oh, The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of The Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Call for your free brochure today. Toll free, dial 888-964-7526. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
Herb Greenberg is a CNBC contributor and appears weekly on various programs, including Squawk Box, Power Lunch, and On the Money. And he is a senior columnist at MarketWatch. He joined them after 6 years as a senior columnist for TheStreet.com. You know that group. And he previously spent 10 years as a six-day-a-week business columnist for the San Francisco Chronicle. He also wrote for Fortune Magazine and has worked for companies like Crane Chicago Business, at St. Paul Pioneer Press. An all-around good guy, a great commentator, and I think a great mind when it comes to investments, because Herb is not like the rest. Herb really gives us an insight that I think is a little bit different, and hopefully you're going to enjoy what he has to say. I know I always do. So, Herb, thanks so much for joining us today on the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
It's great to be here.
Yeah, thanks. So I thought we'd start out with a question of that starts like this. What are the tools that you use when you're looking to find out information about stocks and markets and, you know, what's going on?
You know, it depends how you define tools. Things have changed so much over the years, obviously. And you know, ideas come from all sorts of sources. They come from readers, they come from short sellers, hedge funds, analysts, anything, even things I see on the street sometimes. But the once you get the idea, it's up to me to then go ahead and do the research. And the tools I use really are the basic tools that are available to anybody, because I don't have anything for the most part beyond what anybody has.
Right.
So I'd say the number one tool I use, believe it or not, is the SEC website.
Interesting.
The Securities and Exchange Commission website, because all the information you need is right there. I find myself, when I'm looking at a company specifically, going back and forth and back and forth to various various forms, various filings that have been filed with the SEC. So I spent a lot of time doing that. I'm bouncing back and forth between Yahoo Finance, which has, you know, some great tools, Google Finance, which has great tools, MarketWatch has its own data, which is good tools, Wall Street Journal Finance. I'll hop around from site to site for certain things I need,
right,
that I can't get from one, I'll find on another.
So you're packaging up the best of the best.
I'm trying to, and you know, it's sometimes tough, because especially if you're looking for spreadsheet information, which I don't have. You know, I don't have some data service that just dumps this stuff to me.
Right.
So if you really want to go back and look at a company, either I'm sitting down with a yellow pad and writing it down, or someone sent me a copy from from an analyst report, or I've got an analyst report, or someone sent me their own spreadsheets, and I can look at those. But you know, it's just such a mix.
Yeah.
But I'm sitting in front of two computer screens, and I bounce back and forth from those, and again, from site to site to site, to determining what I'm trying to find.
So it's almost like you're using the raw data, as opposed to a lot of times when you find someone who's using the final data, the finished data, you're going back one step and saying, you know what, I'm smart enough, I can figure this out for myself, or at least I'm going to try to discern what I'm going to get out of this instead of going right to the final version.
Well, again, I get a lot of information. People say, you see this. But before I write anything, I have to confirm it. And confirming it means you have to start going back. I can have somebody come to me and say, did you see this new disclosure in an SEC filing? Well, I've been around long enough to know that new disclosures can just be a change in wording, or new disclosures can be a new disclosure in a certain part of a document. But you know, they've really been disclosing it for quarter after quarter after quarter, but just in a different place. So I do different types of word searches, just different types of things, because you just, you know, don't want somebody to say, wait a minute, we've always said that.
Right.
And so, you know, before I even go to the company, I do that. And you know, one of my favorites is just the proxy statement, because that right then and there, you can find things, everything regarding conflicts of interest. And depending on the company, I'll check out, it's something I've started doing more in recent years, is check out the bonus the CEO gets. And the important part there is I just don't like it if the bonus is based on a single metric. In other words, if it's based on earnings per share, and that's all the bonus is based on, meeting an earnings per share target, I have a problem with that.
Well, you know, one of the things I haven't talked to you about this, but something that has been just sticking me in the side, and my audience knows this because I've been going through it time and time again, is this whole idea of share buybacks and the immediate gratification of increasing EPS based on that. And it's such a concern to me. Obviously, it's legal, it's legitimate, we've been through all this, but there's an end somewhere to that process, isn't there?
Well, there is, and here's the interesting thing. Somebody will counter you, and the counter to that is going to be, look, they're returning value to shareholders by buying back shares. And you can come back, and I can come back and say, well, wait a minute, okay, are they doing this? Are the shares being repurchased from cash or from debt?
Mm-hmm.
And is the company growing? So if you have a growing company that is growing its sales, growing its earnings, growing its cash flow, and the share repurchase is coming from cash, you know what? That may not be a bad way to spend shareholder money, assuming the shares really are cheap and assuming the buybacks really have occurred. Because, you know, there's the announcement of the buyback to get the stock juiced,
yeah,
and then there's the actual buyback.
Right.
But if a company is buying back stock using debt, because we're in a world of, in recent years where you have to, you're silly if you haven't, you know, levered yourself up as a company. If they're doing that, I think then it's a gain. It's a lever a company can use to meet earnings per share targets.
Right.
Well, and I think that's just a sham.
But the problem is, but the problem is going to be, again, just to tie it back to your first sentence on the tub of the subject, was if a CEO is utilizing a EPS metric to get his bonus, and then he's utilizing all the tools at hand just to focus everything on that, that's where we get into some problems.
Well, you could get into problems. I've seen companies. There's one company I focus on that is FLIR, F-L-I-R, and that's the stock symbol in the company's name. And, you know, the company's done well. They have products that you know, night vision products that are real. But, you know, I'll still come back and say I'd rather look at a company like General Electric, where there are broad metrics that the CEO must meet,
mm-hmm,
in order to get his bonus.
Right.
You know, you can look at this so many ways, but if a share buyback is a way a guy can actually meet his earnings per share target and get his bonus, come on.
Right, exactly. You know? So what now? You know, we have a lot of things going on, and I've been asked anytime, all right, what's the Fed going to do and all, and what's not going to happen? Greenspan has been taking a lot of knocks lately for, you know, now they're saying, well, he's the guy that got us into this big problem. And, you know, there's all this kind of conversation going around. And I think my opinion is, tell me what you think, that there is way too much emphasis put on the Fed these days as the sugar daddy for the masses.
It's funny you should say that.
Oh?
It's funny you should say that. Look, you know, I got on TV the other day and I said, you know, this is a schizophrenic market, because, and everybody's looking at the Fed to react to the stock market. And Bob Pisani said something like, and he said, well, but Herb, they do. They do watch the stock market. And I know that.
Mm-hmm.
But what I don't like is the fact that it seems like the market, meaning the stock market, is pushing or trying to push a Fed decision. And there's concern. You can feel it. As the market goes lower, oh, my gosh, the Fed's got to do something to bail us out. And that's bail out stock investors in addition to bailing out, you know, people who got in over their heads on their homes. I personally, again, I think that's not the Fed's role. The Fed's role is not to bail out the stock market. It can use the stock market as a barometer, as a measurement of sentiment. But in the end, you know, it's all about the economy going forward that they're trying to help and not hinder.
Well, it's kind of like this. How about, you know, you go to school when you were a kid and you had a teacher and you knew the teacher's rules and you stuck by them. But when that substitute teacher came in, all hell broke loose, right? You could push
Absolutely.
Him around. It's kind of like maybe they're testing him, the new guy. You know, let's see how far we can
testing,
push him.
You know, look, I'm in the camp. If you want to get back to the Greenspan thing, I'm in the camp that thinks that he could have. His Fed could have kept things a little more conservative, and it was great that rates went low, but that led to everything we are now paying a price for. I think, you know, the thing I've said is, when they cut the rates, and they probably will at some point here, will it be enough? I don't believe it will be, and what I, because I think that the problems are so systemic that it's going to be one of these things where they're going to cut them once, and then we're going to start getting into that old, are they going to do it again? Are they going to do it again? Are they going to do it again?
Yep.
Because it's not going to be enough, certainly, to resurrect the housing market. It may slow the bleed in the housing market a little bit. It may modify them a little bit, you know, the impact that we're currently seeing. But, well, if people think the housing market's going to be going wacko anytime soon, I don't care how they cut rates. That game is over. And so then you get back to the economy, and we're going to find out at some point here just how levered up people were and how much money they really didn't have when it comes to spending money.
Yeah, I'll tell you something. Yeah. Honestly, you know, I've followed you, and I've read you, and I watch you, and I got to tell you something. Honestly, and I find that you are a breath of sanity. Now, that doesn't mean you're always right. None of us are.
No.
Let's be honest, you know, but I find you to be a breath of sanity in this kind of this environment of people just saying things that you have to scratch your head. I mean, I remember very distinctly in July, right into the end of July into the beginning of August, the discussion about liquidity. There's so much liquidity. Don't worry about liquidity. The market's right. Nothing's. I'm saying, what planet are these guys on? I mean, what I don't understand. I mean, what has happened over the last year and a half with the housing market? You know, you want to start comparing it to the crash of 29, but even worse, because at least in 29, if you needed to get out, I mean, you could have, maybe you got out at pennies, but still it was kind of a little bit more liquid, whereas a house is just not liquid. You can't move it.
Well, you know what it is, and when they talk about liquidity, even they were talking about liquidity for the private equity market when it was really hitting that peak. I call this fake liquidity, because that's what it was. It wasn't real. It wasn't people having money. Generally, remember, they're private equity deals that are largely done with cash, so you have to differentiate between that. But when this thing started really hitting its peak and you had all the liquidity that was going to flow into the housing market, fake liquidity, because it was all done with debt. And by the way, you talk about looking at things and saying, what are things? And I keep saying to people, I was on the air the other day, and I said, you know, where's the outrage over the dollar? You know, the dollar, the value of the dollar keeps falling lower and lower and lower.
Right.
And it's sort of like, well, that's a good thing because exports are up and it's helping the trade deficit. And I'm thinking to myself, wait a second. I thought that we didn't want to have a cheap dollar. And at
right.
some point, there may be foreigners who are going to not want to be investors here. They'll buy hard assets if they can because they're cheap. I understand that. They're cheap relative to their own currencies. But there's a point where I was under the impression that a dollar's the strength or weakness of a dollar really as a reflection of the health,
right.
the health of an economy.
And the strength, and the actual economic strength, because of a strong dollar, obviously leads us to be able to do things like either purchase in other countries or have just, I mean, you know what, you have a fat wallet next to a guy with a skinny wallet, the fat guy is going to be able to do what he wants to do.
So the good news is for multinationals based in the United States, it's a great thing because they can sell more goods abroad. Of course, no one's saying, but how many of those multinationals have now set up tax havens in other countries, which many have, very legitimately, so the tax dollars don't ever have to come back to this country,
yeah.
which is a very interesting, you know, part of this whole story.
Right.
And I look at things. You look at the dollar, and everybody wants to come out and intellectualize it and say, and I want to come back and I say, look, you ever traveled abroad? I have a daughter in school in Scotland. You go to Europe. That's all you really have to know, and you have to know what the difference is by just forget about the multinationals.
I was in Russia. I was in Russia for a week in July. It was $10 a cup of coffee. No kidding. I mean, it was $25 for breakfast. I mean, we're so upside down right now with the world, economy. It is scary. And that's one of the things I have a big concern about the Fed, because in a way, the Fed's hands are tied. Whether he injects money by a cut of then he's going to, obviously, we know that generally speaking, rates down, dollar down. And I mean, he's got a lot of things he's got to worry about here in a questionably
inflationary
market.
And he's got a lot of different constituencies because we're dealing with the question of how political is the Fed really?
Right.
And that, you know, everybody sort of tries to duck that question. But when you get back to the dollar, I think that's sort of like the elephant in the room.
Yep.
And it's not an intuitive subject. It's not an easy subject for headlines and for people to grasp. So it's sort of one that just sort of, you know, it just flies under the radar, and everybody says, don't worry, son, it'll be okay.
Right. Help me with something else. I have a question. Sure. I found it kind of interesting, the movement of oil of late. You know, when the markets were, you know, kind of going along their merry way, mm-hmm. and, you know, mm-hmm. oil prices were starting to escalate, and we saw this kind of move to questionable availability of production as well as supply. And then all of a sudden, the markets just fell out of bed, and it was almost perfectly timed that oil went down, what, $10 a barrel, something like that?
Yeah, it was something.
And all of a sudden, the markets start trending back up, and we're now seeing all-time highs again.
It's funny. I'm one of these guys who've been out there saying, you know, the markets, the stock markets, hanging by the thread of oil, and I've been proven wrong because it seems to be going in the reverse direction these days with
oil
prices. And it's, well, you know what? Now, you could argue we don't have to worry about inflation from oil because the credit thing is so bad the Fed has to cut rates or can't raise rates, and maybe that's what's really going on. I mean, look. I talk to all these guys, right? I talk to all these pundits. I watch them all day long. I talk to them. And there's one thing I've learned here. I've learned nobody knows the answer. Nobody knows the right answer. But there are people out there when it comes to the cautionary side of things who have been raising serious red flags. You look at a guy like Robert Rodriguez, who runs the Pacific Advisors. First Capital Advisors in Los Angeles. I'm drawing a terrible blank here, FCA. And he has been, you know, he's one of the great value fund investors. And he has been, it was out there selling his the CDOs and things he owned, because this was a long time ago, because it was First Pacific Advisors, I'm sorry, FPA. He was selling any of the more exotic things they had in his portfolio because he saw delinquency rates starting to rise in some of the mortgages that these things owned well before anyone cared, and it was happening on young maturities. He said, this is crazy. I don't want to be part of this. And yet somebody will say, well, you know, a broken clock is right twice a day. And I'm thinking, you know what, there are those of us who are raising red flags over subprime lenders, over, you know, everything that was going on 3-4 years ago, and everybody just laughed in your face. Just laughed in your face.
Listen, I told people to get out of real estate 2.5 years ago, and people thought I was the biggest idiot going. I said, look at what's going on here. And I said, you know what, though, laugh at me now. But the longer this goes on, the longer you see these people having escalations, and it goes like this. I go to a party back in 1999, and I get surrounded by people throwing out stock symbols at me. It was like a little mini seminar. They couldn't get away from it. Died off for a while. All of a sudden, they start throwing the whole real estate angle at me. Everybody's buying everything. And I said, you know what? The longer this goes on, the harder it's going to fall. But I think the real criminals in this were the 125%ers. The guys, these, and where was the regulation on all this, Herb? What happened?
Well, there wasn't. And when they're listening, I remember about 2 years ago listening to a morning radio show in San Diego that, you know, has the demographics of it are probably mostly female, somewhat blue collar, and I was listening to this thing, and the hosts are kind of funny, so I was listening. It was in the car. I was listening to it, and this guy called up and he said, you know, I've been using these interest only loans, and I'm going to flip. I've been flipping these homes, these interest only loans. They were all talking about how smart this guy was, and he was just a guy.
Right.
And I don't know I don't know if he ever got finally hit, you know, like a lot of these guys.
Well, smart is when he's going to get out. If he's still in, he's stupid. If he didn't get back in and kept his money.
And now, by
great.
The way, someone could argue down where you are in Florida.
Oh, yeah.
There are people who could argue, but there are people who could argue in South Florida. I'm from Miami, so people could argue in Miami that the international market, the South American market, will help, you know, buffer the ultimate blow down there and keep it. You know, there'll be investors for that market. And I don't know how right that is or how wrong that is.
I've seen houses on the market now for a year. On my street, there was a house that the people moved out of over a year ago, and it's a good street. It's the only house in the neighborhood available. It's not selling. It's not going anywhere.
Well, there is a price for it. Someone will buy it.
That's correct. Eventually. Eventually.
You and your neighbors just don't want to see that price. I can tell you
that. Well, we all thought about, you know, building a little putting green on it. You know, knocking the house down and building a little something like that. It'll be a little fun. What is it? You know, my listeners always want to know things like, you know, what should I do now? What shouldn't I do now? What should I be looking at? What shouldn't I? Because there's so much information out there with this whole blogging atmosphere, and I'm part of it. You're part of it. And, you know, we can get information from everywhere. I always wonder, and I have this fear of, all right, who is giving me the information?
Yeah,
you know, and who's listening to
you should
who?
Have that fear.
Yeah, and you know what should, you know, do you have what's a red flag for you? What shouldn't people be doing? What should they be looking at?
Well, you say looking at in terms of what?
You know, they're on the web, they're listening to podcasts, they're watching TV.
I think it's very difficult because there are so many places out there right now. There's an overload of information, and there's part of me that believes you have to try to go somewhere where the information has been vetted, and that's why I believe ultimately. Brands, whether it's MarketWatch or Dow Jones or, you know, Fox or whomever it may be, will have their own umbrella of really people who've been vetted. Because my concern is the sites that are little more than amalgamators of bloggers, people who have their own blogs, haven't really determined who these people are. So somebpencould have a history with, say, penny stocks and a history as a stock promoter. You'll never know it, but you can read his blog where he's out there, you know, criticizing people like me for writing questioning things, and he's suddenly getting credibility, even though he's nobody who's not been proven. And if you try to do a background check, you can't do it because you can't find anything. And I think that's a very important thing because I know there's a commentator right now I've seen him on television, I've seen his stuff, he's emailed me, and I'm going to try to do a background check on him. Because I was a little uneasy with the way he looked on television. And I tried to do a background check and find out, and I couldn't find it.
Really?
There was something missing. Hmm. And I think if you can't Google someone and really just do a little bit of a search, and even go to the NASD website to see if that person has a history that perhaps there's been some disciplinary action on, I think you're potentially heading
into big trouble, right?
Into possible trouble, certainly. Yeah.
What about the fact that I think this is something that's troubling me, but I can't really tell you if it is. I'll tell you why. You know, there's a name that keeps on coming up over and over. That Henry Blodgett. Remember him?
Yeah, I know Henry.
Henry, wasn't there something back in like the 1999 to 2000 time period where he was? And forgive me if I'm wrong. Maybe you could straighten me out here. But I thought he was barred from the industry.
No, I don't know exactly what happened. There was some issue with him. As an analyst, you know, he had made some projections. He was saying one thing and allegedly saying one thing and telling his clients something else.
Right.
You know, privately and publicly doing two different things. But he's not an analyst. He's a writer.
Hmm.
And actually, Henry. You know, you talk to someone like me, and a lot of us will look back, and, you know, Henry was is actually a pretty smart guy. He's a journalism background, and actually is somebody who is a good needler. He's a very good writer, and I think, you know, he's paid his dues, and I haven't talked to him in a year or two, but I think he is, he's certainly out there, you know, rattling the cages because he was inside those cages. He was there. And so, actually, someone like that, you may want to pay a little bit of attention to.
Mm-hmm.
But he's not making stock calls. Can't.
Right. No, that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying.
That's what you have to find out. And you want to find out the credibility of somebody. And that my concern is there are a lot of people who are out there who just, you know, they sprung up, and it's one you can spring. Anyone can spring up and go from here to the next level to the next level.
Sure.
And then there are others who are there, and I look at information. I remember one of these sites had some guy who was disputing stuff I was writing, and we finally found out who he was and what his background was. Finally, we were able to tell the service, and the service took him down. But what was he doing on there in the first place?
Right. I've had situations where, listen, there was a time when I was about 2.5 months ago, I was just all over Crocs, you know, the stock Crocs. And I said, I got to tell you something. I was Mr. Negative. I thought I was the only person out there that was saying.
Man, you've got a thicker skin than I have.
I tell you something. I thought it was like I murdered their family. I mean, I was getting hate mail. I was, you know, you go on the sites and these long commentaries of what a, you know, beep I was. But I said, here's why. Now, I was helped out by the fact that I was shorted for my clients and I was shorted for myself. And we made about 12 points on the short because of the mid-July movement down. And obviously we pulled it out and it went back up. And I still have my reservations about the stock and all that. And so, but nonetheless,
you're crazy, man. Why would you go against a cult company like that? I've learned my lesson over the years, these cult stocks.
Yep. You mentioned Apple, it's all over. You know, you can't mention negative anything.
Well,
Apple.
You know, it's like Hanson. I was the equivalent of Crocs on Hanson.
Right.
And for all the right
reasons. The soft drinks, right?
Yeah, except for all the right reasons, the reasons you would think they would have imploded, and yet they didn't, and they ended up doing a great job. With Crocs, the only thing I ever wrote negative about Crocs was when the founder got into some legal trouble about 2 years ago, and it was kind of some strange stuff. But I've avoided the Crocs story like the plague, just because, you know, it's got the wind at its back, and there's unless somebody can show me there's some fraud there or there's something where there's definitely a deterioration in the trends of their sales, something's off. I figure, you know, I've done this long enough. Why go there?
Well, the only thing is that two
so
things,
other companies.
What really sparked it, well, first of all, last week they did announce that the CEO came on, said his margins are going to be a bit more compressed moving forward. Okay, fine. Mm-hmm. They came out with that really high-end line and questionably whether that's going to sell. Okay, fine. Kids getting caught in the escalators with it. Okay, fine. Mm-hmm. Let's leave that alone. When I saw that the CEOs and the top guys sold $250 million of stocks mid-part of this year and started unloading like crazy. Now, rightfully so, they want to diversify and all that good stuff. You know, I started to wonder, really, is this something that's going to be a fad? Because, and I'm not going to really get into the whole thing, but again, it was the whole ugliness factor. It was, you know, questionably.
There's so much, but yet people were taking these things and were wearing them. And I saw them, when I saw them in a health food store here, you know, on the end caps, I was thinking to myself, wait a minute, this is it. They're just, what are they doing here?
Yeah.
And it was just like, you know, this thing is just everywhere now. The top is here. And I think we've learned on some of these things, you know, there are other kinds of companies to go after. And sometimes these cult-like companies, I've just found out, unless somebody can show me something really, really bad, you know, it's like Harley. Look at Harley Davidson. Harley, for years, people were raising questions about Harley. And only now is Harley sort of like using this conveniently as the quarter to start saying things aren't so great.
Right.
But, you know, you could have made serious. There were serious red flags flying over Harley for years.
Right. All right, let's finish up with this. So tell me, what's your projection going forward the next couple of months? What are we going to, you know, not, I don't want you to pin you down to exactly. And
I can't do that because I don't make forecasts.
Right, but I mean, your general feeling of, I mean, generally the markets, I mean, is this really something, this whole mortgage issue?
I think the mortgage issue is huge. You have, as everybody has said now, you haven't seen the next wave of resets. You haven't seen the impact of that. Rates coming down will probably soften the blow a little bit right now, but I believe, I personally believe this is, you ain't seen nothing yet. People have been living way outside of their means for a long time, and they're not going to be able to get creative financing to help them keep doing that.
Right.
And at some point that's going to hit, and I think over the next few months you're going to see a lot of tremendous volatility, and you know, toward year end, we're going to get people trying to make their numbers and their quarters, that is, the hedge fund guys, and maybe they'll be playing some funny little games there as they often do at the end of the year.
Yeah.
But I think that, you know, in the end, the wisest stuff I've ever heard from people is, you know, do I believe in stocks? Absolutely. But, you know, it's always a stock picker's game, but the day traders and the traders are the ones who make the most noise.
Yep.
And just remember, there was a time when Warren Buffett was almost considered he's so out to lunch, doesn't know technology. And the funny thing is, he was the last guy standing. Yeah. Not that he was really the last guy standing, but, you know, he was ringing bells and sounding sirens over derivatives and all the rest of this funny stuff. And you know what? He goes about his knitting, does what he has to do. And I think that's a great template, you know, just.
I agree. The only thing that's happening now, though, with Warren Buffett is everybody's using his name as a stepping stool to prove their point.
That's unfortunate. And those of us go way back and you back when and even now. And I think you make a great point there. But I think that the idea of a Buffett-esque, just pay attention to the business. There are businesses and there are stocks.
Right.
Don't ever lose sight of that. And stocks and businesses often go in two very different directions. But in the end, if it's a good business, it will prevail.
Yeah. Herb Greenberg, thanks for joining me today on the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Where would you want people to, you know, to go to see your stuff?
They can see my stuff at marketwatch.com, where I have a blog, and I also write a column in the Saturday Wall Street Journal.
Right.
So they can, you know, generally, I think if you go to Google and you put in Herb Greenberg blog or Herb Greenberg, you'll start finding a bunch of stuff. But my home is marketwatch.com.
Okay, great. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Hey, it's been a pleasure.
Stick around for more of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
Looking for answers to today's complex financial markets? Then be sure to get your copy of The Disciplined Investor, Essential Strategies for Success, your all-in-one guide to investing. Order now at thedisciplinedinvestor.com or your favorite bookstore. The Disciplined Investor. Together, we will reach success.
Here's a follow-up on a question that I had from Bruce. And Bruce wrote me about the preferred stocks I recommended. I recommended actually about three. And I recommended them some time ago, and they're down slightly. And when I say slightly, I think that down 1%, 1.5%, 2% is pretty slight overall when you think about preferred stocks, because this is my answer. And first of all, let me say his question. He said, since I last wrote, the market for the preferreds are recommended continues to deteriorate. To date, he bought the Bank of America, it's down about 2.5%, ING down 1.3%, Royal Bank of Scotland down 1.68%. Royal Bank was a 7.25% preferred stock, the ING 7%, and Bank of America was about, 6.25% approximately. Now, here's the thing. Bruce and everybody else, I want you to listen to me about preferred stocks. The reason why I like preferred stock is that they have a low amount of volatility, number one. Number two, they have a consistency and a history of paying dividends very nicely. Of course, those are the high-rated ones we're talking about. And the third point is that in a time of real volatility in a market, it seemed apropos to have something that had a lower volatility potential. I wrote him back and I said, you know, Bruce, the preferreds are moving with buyer sentiment. Right now, you know, maybe buyers are not as interested as the stock market starts to move up because, again, these are uncorrelated assets. These are not, they don't move in tandem. They're also setting up to pay dividends, most of these. And as these are getting ready to pay dividends, they move down in value commensurate with the dividend. I told them to find the ex-dividend dates for these and see how close they're getting to the date that they're going to be paying the actual dividend. These are great names and, you know, you realize something, that this volatility, about a 2% variation up or down from the price at any given time is normal for preferreds. I don't think any of these are problematic. And remember something important, that these are thinly traded. Even the small amount of selling moves them. And I'm not too concerned about any of these, especially because they have solid dividends and good dividends that are coming moving forward. These are standard variations. Sit tight. Don't worry about it. Diversification is the key. Remember something, even if, let's say, the ING group is down 2% since the date you bought it, Bruce, if you're going to make 7% overall on it for the year, you're still getting 5%, no worse than you would be in a money market. I do not believe that when you look at these stocks, that the variation underlying this is anything to do more than the very basic point that they're just not really getting hit and bid up by investors right now. There's a lot of uncertainty in the markets when it comes to interest rates, and this is an interest rate sensitive instrument. Now, obviously, is there a point that we become concerned? Sure. But at the time when we are getting closer to dividends, I don't think any of these have paid a dividend very recently. The fact is that we're going to see the stocks move down in corresponding with those dates. And at the same time, realize that the markets have been all over the place. So if the worst thing is that you're down 1% or 1.5%, which, I mean, think about it for 1 second. The fact is that, again, 25 cents, 50 cents on a stock, any stock, even a preferred, is not a big deal. And when we start getting to over 5%, that's where we're going to have some concern. So keep a watch on these, but don't worry right now. I don't think there's any problems with it. But, of course, be careful on anything in these markets right now. With that, we're going to have to wish you a good day. Thanks for listening. Thanks for being here. I appreciate it. Of course, those iTunes reviews are so helpful. We're going to get over 100, gang. Thanks so much for joining me. And go visit the site, thedisciplinedinvestor.com, where there's a great article on a question that I ask of, what does Schwab and Bernanke have in common? Go get the answer there and leave some feedback. And if you have any questions, again, ask Andrew at thedisciplinedinvestor.com. That's how you can reach me. And until next week, have a great week of investing. Send me some emails. I'd love to hear what you're doing and your ideas. Maybe give me some ideas for some shows and some things coming up. Call on the line. Buy the book. Have a great week. The Disciplined Investor Podcast is done for this week, episode 27. Bye-bye.
The Disciplined Investor Podcast is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager. The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contain forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor regulated by the SEC. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.
Hey, thanks for listening to today's podcast. We'll be here next time. Keep the emails coming in and be sure to subscribe.
Next time.